Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Is 102.3 FM Riverside
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren. Mr. David Martino is somewhere in the room.
Somewhere?
Yeah, well, I'm somewhere here. You went to sleep. I heard noise, but then I don't know. I wasn't sure if it was a mouse or.
Yeah, it was a mouse. That's what it was.
Just a little mouse.
It was my cat.
Oh, it's a cat. Well, that's not a mouse. Yeah. That's a big, it's a big mouse. If it's
a big mouse. Yeah.
You know. Wow. It's crazy. Crazy world we're living in.
Yeah, I know.
I see. I was, of course, cruising social media as I do, as one does in 2020,
does.
Right? In this day and age. And I'm going through, and of course, I avoid all the Trump stuff and all the other stuff because it's so much of it. And then finally I come across something that makes me stop. And it's, if it's not funny, it's something different. And they're talking about, you remember Queen, the band, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, we grew up with that. And,
of course.
You remember Fat Bottom Girls?
Yeah.
That song, right? And now they've decided to take it out of the greatest hits.
Oh, really?
Collection because of the.
Wow.
Suggestion of Fat Bottom Girls, I guess. I kind of thought this that was kind of wow. funny because if anything, I thought it was positive about Fat Bottom Girls. They weren't saying like Fat Bottom Girls, you're awful, we hate you.
No,
it was like you make the rock and world go round. So they were
around,
very positive about big butt girls. So I
don't
understand why they needed to do that. I don't.
Yeah, I don't get it.
Things like that make me stop and kind of go. Things that make you go, that could be a song, you know.
It could be.
Well, nobody knows that song exists, right?
No.
you just do that song and they'll be like, oh, that's a good song. They've never heard it before, right? I'm just saying. I'm trying to help you out here.
Yeah.
Is
that CNC Music Factory?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And one of the C's died.
Oh.
He was real sick. One of the C's
died
years ago. And that's why it sort of ended. Because they probably would have gone a long ways.
Yeah.
But never had the chance. Anyway, but Fat Bottom Girls don't make the greatest hits now.
No, they don't.
So hold on to the old version. I don't know, do people still buy albums? I guess, well, you do. I forget.
I do, yeah.
But people
they're buying vinyl again. It's a big thing.
Yeah. That's kind of a trend. Like, they're doing that, and it's going on, but, you know, in 5 years, they're going to probably quit. And you know what I mean? Like, that trend will end with the next generation. But I just, because don't most people buy on Amazon now or one of those
places? Or stream
it. So I guess they're going to take it off the Stream album and put it aside. I don't know what they're going to do. I find that really kind of funny. But
well, it's a reason to collect physical media. They can't take it away from you if you own it.
Yeah, because I'm still upset. Black Box, the original Black Box album, you can't get.
Wow.
Now, and it's not even available on Amazon. They've got remixes and different things, but you can't just get the album that is really good. And, so there you go. Get out there and buy some more. You get to that dollar store.
That's right. I will. Yeah. Whatever I can find.
I bet they know you by name.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
They go, there's Dave. They know me as that guy. That guy.
Oh, I would have figured they'd be texting you. Oh, we got the Tanya Roberts movie from 10 years ago that nobody liked, and we can sell it to you for a buck.
And I'd be like, okay, I'll be right there.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I would think
did.
You'd be in hot dial there.
I should be.
On the top five favorites. Dollarama and Dave. They're both D's. You're Dollarama Dave now.
Dollarama Dave. That's a new name.
That's better than the Rose.
Yeah.
Anyway. Well, speaking of newbies, now we're going to talk to a new author, or she's been writing for quite a few years, I think 10 years or so, but out shopping a book, and let's talk about what the process is like and what it's like being a new writer and getting out there. So how's that? So let's welcome Cindy Brett. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for the invitation. I appreciate it. How are you doing?
I am just wonderful.
I'm glad to hear that. How about you, David?
I'm very well.
Yeah, he hangs out in the dollar store. He's fine.
Yeah.
You know? You guys hang out listening to albums, right?
Well, I don't. I moved on to CDs, and then they canceled that, so now I'm stuck with, Amazon Music or whatever, and I'm used to it because I'm used to carrying my phone around and letting it play, but I'm okay with change. I'm moving along. It's okay.
Yeah.
It doesn't bother me. Dave's got to have the medium.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love change, but I'm not good with technology.
Well, I'm fine with that. That doesn't give me a problem at time. I learn it. Well, so in this modern world, here you are. So you've been writing, you've been doing, now, so you write, let's talk about, first of all, you write young adult urban fantasies, and you've been writing a series in this area, and you've been putting this all together now, I guess, for 10 years. So let's start out with how you came to decide to write this book 10 years ago. Like, what was it that happened that you kind of go, wow, I need to write this?
Well, I could start off by saying I'm an avid reader, and I would read books, and ideas started like percolating in my mind and stuff. And when I would read these books, I never got an idea of, I like the settings. I like to be anchored in the settings. And my husband, I own this, used to own a water mill, and I was sitting there and I was just like, hey, it'd be kind of neat to have a book here. Well, then that just developed into other things. And then one night I went to sleep and I started just like having thoughts cross my mind. I grabbed a notebook. I started writing those notes down. That spiraled into, it's like the more I wrote, the more I had to, these images just kind of assaulted my mind. And I just kept writing these things in notebooks. So by the time I was done, I had a notebook full. And I was like, what do I do with it? Because I was getting more images that came. So from there, I ended up joining a writing group and worked things out from there. And let's put it this way. The first 4 years was studying the craft of writing. Rewriting that first book, which is now The Secrets Beneath Scars in the Fearns series. From there, I actually wrote book two, and I'm just on the last chapter of book three. While I've been trying to generate and maintain social media and stuff like that. And that's kind of like the initial overall idea of how it just kind of came about. It's the setting. It's the love of passion for storytelling and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, if you're having images assault you, you know, that's, you must have been reading Dave's book.
I'm sure that it is not, they just came so quick, so natural, so like.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Did they put you away or put you on medication or?
No.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Okay.
No.
They take away your driver's license?
No.
Okay. Well, that's good. Yeah, you probably drive a school bus.
Oh, my goodness.
There's a lot of people out there. And I'm trying to take this from a point of view of someone listening that maybe has ideas like yours or maybe has things happen like you or similar to you or in some sort of variance. And so when these things are happening to them, they think, well, maybe I should write, or they keep the ideas and stuff like that, and they're kind of hemming and hawing. Because I think all writers, even someone like I've got 30 books published, but I'm still not confident in my writing. I still have issues there, and that's quite common with writers. So what is it that makes you feel or gives you the confidence to actually put this out so people can read it?
That's a good question. I don't know that I would say that I have the confidence as much as I have the support of, I have the energy and the support of people, enough people in my writing group. And truthfully, it was when I met Jonas Saul, who's my agent now, at a conference. And I asked him to edit my books here, my first book. Then he did my second book. A couple years later, he contacted me. He says, what are you doing with those? And basically, he asked me if he could represent me. It wasn't until then that I kind of got a little bit more confidence. But I can't say that I'm actually, like, confident. I think a little bit of staying, not having confidence kind of keeps me grounded a little bit more.
Right. It gives you somewhere to go. Mm-hmm. So an agent kind of calls you up and says, hey, you know, what are you doing? This is interesting. And they're, so you get all this together. So urban fantasy. So now, if I'm right, you actually create a whole world.
Correct.
And the reason I say if I'm getting it right is because I'm an old guy. And for me, urban fantasy and science fiction are really the same. And I know that there's differences and there's all of these things going on and it's all these subdivisions. But in essence, you're creating a world and then you put your characters in it.
Correct.
So did you develop this whole world first and get it fairly complete and then put your characters into this world? Or did you have your characters kind of already somewhat fleshed out, and then you created the world for them?
I had a general idea what I was working with. I knew I was working with something related to Atlantis, but it wasn't an Atlantean world. I don't approach the Atlantean world until we get into book three. The Therans are a hybrid. They're between humans and Atlanteans. And so I crafted this world as I was writing. I had the general governmental makeup of it, but I kind of unfolded the more I got to understand my character, Callie. She's the main character. And Tristan, because Callie, to start off with, my main character, she doesn't know who she is. She's lost her parents. She's lost everything practically. And she's trying to struggle and figure out, you know, who she is, her identity. The first book is a self-discovery of who she is. And then she's fortunate to meet somebody that can guide her, but then he brings his own threats, the danger forward, and they struggle through it all.
Well, how do you keep track of your world building and your characters? Did you develop any systems? Do you use any tools? How does that work?
Okay, so for me, I actually do have a system. I usually, first of all, I'm a mixture between a pantser and a plotter. So it's kind of like that approach that James Scott Bell might use. You use index cards, okay? So I have the 3F structure set up on a board. I have individual sticky notes. And on those sticky notes, I have the developing scenes underneath Act 1, Act 2, Act 3. I have then a bigger book where I have, and it's a notebook, that I have those scenes broken up, that if I get an image or I get an idea, I've put it in that notebook. However, when I look at my board that I have that's broken up into the 3-act structure, I am able to move those sticky notes around if something doesn't fall in line mentally. So it's kind of for me, I call it mind mapping. It's just how it fits where it feels right in the way I think. So that's in general how I do that. And it's rather involved. I actually have, let me see, I have 5 boards on my wall that keep me in line with my actual story world. Because I'm managing, not only am I managing the human world that we currently live in, I got the governmental system, the hierarchy of how the Therian world works. And then because I'm in book 3, I've already crafted everything that comes through the Atlantean world. And this Atlantean world is like the title says, it's Utopia's dark side. It's a different conceptualization of what Plato would have worked with when he described Atlantis as a utopia. But that's pretty much my method of working through things and staying on task.
So now the characters in this world, you create the same sort of issues and boundaries and things that happen to humans in the human world. Do they have the same issues to face, or do they have completely different ones?
Let me back up on that one. For, I think, a reader to really engage with a book, they need escapism. So at the same time, I think they need to be grounded in something that's real, something that they themselves can identify with. But I think what keeps them anchored into the story world is something new, something different. Whether, like in my book one, you think there's a ghost. It's not a ghost. It's a creature that he's doing his own hunting in the vaulted library. And I think because of this feathered creature, and when I introduce it, it kind of keeps the reader engaged. But I write, I want real, raw emotions. I don't want somebody dies one chapter, and the next chapter, everybody's full of smiles. I want to be anchored in the emotions of the true heart, the true feelings of what's a reader or someone in real life would have to go through, in the struggles, the character arc, in other words, of how that character gets out of it, or that person in real life could work through their difficult times. I don't know if that comes because my background is a recreational therapist, but I've always had a desire to help people, and I love the raw emotion that people go through, and I love to read a book myself with raw emotion. So I would definitely say I prefer to write my characters with turmoil and real raw emotion.
Okay, and so what is your relationship with your characters then? How do you describe that relationship?
How do I describe my relationship with the character? Well, Callie is a mixture of me and my daughter. Believe it or not, I would say my relationships are really good with my character. I love the fact that my character's got flaws. I love the fact that she, at first, she stumbles through things. Nothing works, whether it's a vision malfunction or her interpretation of or her perspective on issues. But, yeah, my relationship with Callie, the main character, is great. Writing from a male point of view, that's difficult. So the first two books are written from my main character, and I easily can write her, but diving into the head of a teenage boy, that was difficult.
Well, do you have an internal monologue? Can you hear your characters? And is that how you create dialogue, or do you have some other way?
I do a mixture. I actually, at night, like I said, I will get images that work best, and like I describe them as like little scenes. And then I figure out when I sit at my desk, I actually close my eyes a lot of the times and type. And then I work out that dialogue. And yes, the words really come quite easily. And I do this in like a 45-hour minute time period for a writing sprint. Once that writing sprint time is done, I take a deep breath, because sometimes those scenes, sometimes I can't type as fast as I'm getting the dialogue in my mind. And then I go back and edit later, because I definitely do not edit that scene until after I take a good break from it, like 15 minutes or something. But those words come very easily.
It sounds like it's you know, it's an important story, and the character's really important and stuff. Do you have a meaning or subtext or something that you're going to want people to pick up in the book underneath the storyline that's not part of the entertainment or the fantasy world? Is there some meaning behind this?
Yes. I really believe history is extremely important, and these theorems, they are stewards of history. And you can see throughout all three books the significance of what's written in a tome, in a book, written in a different language that is there. So I would definitely say that all three of the books correlate to one understanding. If we forget our history, we're doomed to repeat it.
Certainly can be true. How do you describe what young adult urban fantasy is? So for older listeners and stuff, how would you describe that to them?
There's a lot of lines that cross between paranormal fantasy and urban fantasy. And like you were talking about earlier, science fiction, where urban fantasy fits in, it's usually in a city, in the setting, and so forth. And not all the time does urban fantasy have romance. Paranormal is when you get into your witches and your warlocks and fairies and stuff like that. And it usually has romance. The reason why I put the genre in urban fantasy is because my setting does take place in a city. It's on the outskirts of the city, but it does take place on the campus of a college. So I have it there, and that's why I put it there. But I would say the interesting thing about this is the Ashworth College or campus, it for the series, I don't know, I just urban fantasy, that's what I could basically say.
With urban fantasy, sometimes the story itself is more whimsical, and sometimes it's more serious. Where would you place your novels on that spectrum?
On that spectrum, the first book does not come off as serious. It's deep. Definitely by the third book, it's very serious. It's a lot more, it's mind-bending, and it's dangerous. It's life-threatening. It's not just the character finding out her own identity or going up against her nemesis for an ancient talisman, which is what happens in book two. Book three is dark. It's in some aspects, when I was chatting with someone yesterday, I described it almost kind of out of norm for me to write, but kind of brutal.
When you're doing an urban fantasy and you have all of these things going on, you know, you talk about, you know, between paranormal and witches and stuff like this. What do you base that on, in the sense of, do you take the standard, I guess, trope or ideas behind what a witch is and what a witch does or what ghosts do and what, like, are you taking the standard human definitions of these people or ideas?
Well, my book series doesn't deal with witches or warlocks or anything like that. It does deal with a creature that has apparition, he's fast and stuff like that. I mean, what I've read about things, I've never really dealt with witches or anything like that, but yeah, I don't really get into the witches and the warlocks, unless it's Twilight, but I haven't written about them in my story, so.
Right, and yeah. but what I'm saying is, you take a lot of this, the things that we talk about and experience and things that humans deal with, that's in your world as well.
Yes, most definitely it's in my world. But I don't write about the witches and stuff like that. But I definitely write about powers. I try to ground a lot of the book series in these characters have innate powers. However, I do work with a lot of science behind these understandings when something comes to build on. I try to work with actual science, whether it's magnets or something like that.
What about the Atlanteans? Are you following what's been written about them, whether it's in history or through other books, nonfiction books and such? Or do you have to use your own creative portion of your mind to make it up?
Well, actually, I studied Plato. I studied the Creators. I studied several of the dialogues that he wrote. And I took his Creators, broke it down over a period of, I would say, 3 months. And then I used some of his ideas and structured my Atlantis around his Atlantis. And because I wanted to kind of be form-fitting, but at the same time, I wanted originality, something that was very organic. And I've seen many stories, read many stories, seen many movies where you've got an Atlantis that's on Earth, you've got an Atlantis underwater. Believe it or not, I've actually worked within the Utopia's dark side to have it a combination of both, and there's justification for it within the governmental system of the Atlantean world.
So what makes a good story for you when you're reading a book? What is it that keeps you focused on the book?
Truly, honestly, I want to escape. The second thing would be character arc. If I'm reading a book and there's a character arc that is flat, I could usually put that down. And usually you could tell, I would say at least by the first half of the book, if there's going to be a character arc. I want to engage in a world that I can lose myself in, escape in a world that is different than my own, even though I love, ultimately, fantastically love my world. I also want something that's rich, almost like textural, that you could feel it, you can taste it. So the reader really has to be vivid, has to be a fantastic writer. And there's lots of good writers out there, at least the ones I've encountered, especially here lately.
At the end of the day, like when you started this book, you said that, how the ideas or these things were coming to you and all that. When you first kind of plotted out the story and the world and you started kind of outlining whatever part you did outline, mm-hmm. And you had this image in your mind of what you wanted to do. Now, when you're at the other end of these books, and it's just about all done, did it turn out kind of where you wanted it to go originally?
8 years ago, I knew after brainstorming with my husband how the ultimate nemesis would die. I knew without a doubt. However, I didn't know the steps that it would take to get to that point. It's like building, I've been building the pieces as I go. I would say that's where that's at.
So what's your plan now? So you've got this being shot. What's your hopes for this now?
My hopes is that, I'll finish the last chapter here shortly, probably within the next 2 weeks. After that, I have my, newsletter going out, in October. And hopefully Jonas will be pitching to people, and we'll get a good solid bite. That's.
And so So what's your website? What and where do people find you? Do you social media? Like where?
Facebook. I'm on Twitter. I just started a YouTube account, and I'm on Instagram. And also, they could follow me at cindybreck.com. For my website, they will find me there. And I explain quite a bit more on my website about the Theron world and so forth. So it's just kind of interesting.
Fantastic. Of course, we'll have that up, and people can find you easily with one click and stuff. Hey, so what happens to your characters when the series is over? What happens to your characters? Do they stay with you, or what's your idea on that?
Well, I don't think they'll ever leave me. I've actually contemplated writing another book that would be a standalone urban fantasy that would work with this book series. And I'm hoping to do that, but to actually have my character, Callie, have graduated high school and into college and then experiencing some troubles, but using her gift at that time. Right now, Callie, through high school, she thinks of her visions as a curse. But I put her in this standalone book, I want her to recognize that her visions are a gift. And so with that, it would put her in a better stance, but that does not mean that she won't run into problems and stuff. So I have already started a notebook on that, because I might be running one idea how to close up a book, and then I'm already getting images of how to work on another storyline, so for the standalone.
How do you experience your characters when you're writing them? Like, do you hear them? Do you see them? What's that process?
When I am asleep, usually I see things. Like just like a dream. And then usually sometimes I might hear like a phrase or something, and then like the muse is working, and then I'll get an idea From that, and I write it down because I have a notebook at my bedside. And then usually that triggers what I write down, triggers things for me. So I sit at my computer and I have a system that I do. Like I have to have my coffee and all that kind of stuff. But then I will sit down and I will close my eyes and I will write.
And your husband's still alive?
Oh, yes. Yes.
He hasn't disappeared.
No. He's a good keeper. He's a definite keeper because he keeps on giving me a bunch of science stuff to consider. I resort to talking to two people when I need have questions on science aspects to generate ideas within my story world. So he better stay around.
If you're having dreams and stuff, maybe, you know, you wake up and there's bloody shoes and a shovel.
Oh, no, not that. But I actually, believe it or not, I have to turn on my phone flashlight so I can write. So sometimes that does disrupt his sleep.
Well, I was wondering, do your characters ever surprise you? Do they run off with the plot and take it into some area that you really didn't want to go?
Yeah, they do. And then sometimes it's backed me into a corner. A lot of the times, actually, I have to say that, it gets me backed into a corner where sometimes I don't know how to get out of it, but I find there's such a benefit to the payoff of it, because when a reader reads it, then they're like, oh my gosh, what are they going to do? How are they going to get out of this? And then that ultimately leads to the next chapter surprise of how did Callie get out of this situation? So yes, I'm often surprised. Like I said, I have a general idea when I sit down at the computer what I'm writing, but things really develop and unfold the more I listen to things and then things taking place. I like to build and run off of a tension and intrigue in every scene, not chapter, scene. And because you could have a couple of scenes in a chapter. Usually, Callie's pretty good at getting me into difficult spots. And I say that in a good way, because I think readers like to read stuff that's not predictable.
So for other new writers out there, or people that haven't been published and they're kind of looking, what is the biggest challenge or the biggest hurdle for you so far been?
I would say two things. One, confidence at first. I've always struggled with confidence. I would have to say the second is that I'm dyslexic. And when I type, I transpose my letters. So therefore, I don't usually sit down at the computer if I'm stressed out. I have to be very calm and when I type. So I would say those have been two of my biggest hurdles. However, at the same time, I haven't given up on myself. I haven't given up on my writing and I haven't given up on my story, because I would have to say those hurdles have been also a blessing, you know. Because I think not being so confident has kept me more grounded and humbled. And I think my dyslexia has aided me, because I seem to see things differently. I've done enough research on dyslexia, and I think blessing than a curse. I look at life differently than a lot of people, I think.
What's your favorite part of writing? What's the thrill that you get out of it?
The satisfaction of knowing that I completed that scene. Or satisfaction that I actually walked away from writing that scene and learned something new about life. As a writer, you learn also when you write about the real world, too. As a reader, I think you can learn many, many things, too. But I think that's something I would take away.
So when you look back at this whole process, how much do you think it's changed you?
I think it's changed me a lot, because I might get nervous about, like, having to talk to someone, but at the same time, I'm comfortable with who I am as myself. And it's through this journey of learning that it's okay to have flaws, like dyslexia, to not be perfect, to be unpolished and to be raw, to be real, that I've learned to love myself that much more. And I think the last 10 years in writing, I've learned to look at myself and say, you know what, I'm okay.
You know, since you're finishing book three now, the dark book, and when we talk about that, are you conscious about how dark you get or what kind of violence you put on the page?
Yes. Yes, I am. Yeah. I would say book one and two are PG. Book three hits the PG-13 mark. Yeah, I'm very conscientious. I'm actually aware, like, I don't go out of my way to use, take the Lord's name in vain, like, oh God, or something like that. But at the same time, I try to be real that, oh my gosh, there's so much violence in this world. You've got to be real with what you write. So, however, but when I wrote book three, I knew Callie, because she's an instrument of prophecy, I knew that what she was coming up against 8 years ago when I crafted the ending in my, mentally in my mind, that she had to have powers that were extreme when she was coming up against her antagonist. But at the same time, if I wanted a young adult to read it, it couldn't be too bad. But it's on the edge. It's on the edge. And it's a different type of dark side, utopia's dark side. It's, it is violent, but it's mental in aspects too. And it's conquering, it's my character conquering her own inner demons while she's learning to navigate who she is as an instrument of prophecy.
So when you're writing kind of an evil or a bad character, do you have any problems getting into the mindset of that, or how do you get into that character?
I studied it. I like looked at Hannibal Lecter. I gravitated towards evil. I think that's the one that Tom Cruise was in. I watched different movies. I studied. I talked with my group on how to craft an evil person. But it's not all about the antagonist being evil. There's got to be more to it. And I wanted depth, a story depthness that drew the reader in at the beginning of book three, so they understood who she was a little bit, but through other people's perspectives. So when they met the main antagonist, they would be floored. And I definitely study that stuff. That one for me did not come naturally. Writing my antagonist did not come naturally at all. That's been difficult for me.
Well, I think with the bad guy, so to speak, or the person that is doing the evil or the bad things, let's say, you've got to make the reader understand why they feel they're doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's usually what it is. They, no matter what, they think what they're doing is something they should be doing.
Correct.
That they're on the right path. So I think in order to get that across, the reader has to understand why that person is there. Why is it they feel what they're doing is the good thing.
Correct.
Or the right thing.
Yeah.
And that's not always
easy. No, it's not. And it's a balancing act, especially when there's more than one evil person. You know, you have to balance that their personalities, their characteristics are different, and they could stand on their own. And those hidden antagonists are the ones that you think are helping you and trying to move something forward, and they're really, you know, the villain, you know?
Do you ever use people you know in the book? Like, you know, are there people around you or people you've come across in life here that you've kind of been inspired, or they've inspired a character that you've written?
Well, like I was saying earlier, like Callie's kind of a mixture of my daughter and myself. And right. There's one of the other characters. Tristan's kind of a mixture of my husband and my grandfather. In the storyline, I actually have a lot of young adult books are written where they do not have a parental governing figure. I wrote a grandfather figure in because I think it's very important that there is that parental figure, because it actually adds to a challenge when you're writing the story world. But I would say the grandfather figure is kind of a mixture of my mother-in-law and my father-in-law in there. However, a lot of the other people, no, I did not put them after anybody else. But I think that, Alan, I think that is the reason why Callie came to me so easily, because I could identify with her, as in when my daughter was growing, I was writing different things as she was going through her stages of her life and stuff like that. And so it was kind of easy for me to pick up on, you know, because I had like a little mini person out there running and stuff. But for me, that's it. I mean, I've been blessed to, in this book series, each person in my family has been a major influence and very supportive, whether it's my daughter or my husband helping brainstorm. My son has helped me with all the strategies for self-defense or martial arts. He has helped guide me through, talking me through routine steps, the language, the choreograph. So I got it right. And so in general, yeah, I definitely, those three characters are definitely written with someone in mind.
Well, I was hoping you'd give us some gossip, like you killed off a neighbor or something.
But I'm not allowed to do that. That'd be a spoiler.
Oh, come on.
Have you given your secrets away, Alan? Have you given your secrets away about your story?
All the time. All the time.
Yeah, but No, I won't do that. I'm trying to think if there is a secret. Well, actually, I did give a secret away today, and that was about the hybrid, and that the Therians are a hybrid from Atlanteans and humans.
Well, if you need help with martial arts, just give Dave a call.
Oh.
Yeah. He's the karate expert. Yeah.
It's, you know what? That's a great, great hobby to have. Some people make it a career, but that's a rewarding skill to have.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Keeps him in shape. You should see him. Yeah. Like he looks like
Hemsworth. I'm trying to burn off the pandemic weight.
Oh, geez. No, you got to keep it.
Like Chris Hemsworth. That's a hard one to do.
He's taking the Thor role over for Hemsworth, you know.
Work out in the morning.
You mean Fat Thor?
Yeah, he's taking the role over for Thor when he's a grandpa.
My goodness.
The wise one. Well, anyway, it's been a pleasure, and hopefully, you know, listeners will enjoy, you know. So stay tuned. We'll have Cindy's website up and all her information, and people stay tuned and see what comes out of this. So, again, thank you very much for coming on the show, Cindy Breck.
Yes, Alan, David, thank you for this opportunity, and you guys take care.
Thanks, Cindy.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.